The speakers this morning did a really good job of talking about how we develop these panels and the current state of technology, but what I'd like to do is shift gears a little bit and talk about how we're using these marker panels in the feedlot production environment to manage those feedlot cattle. Just to give you a little background on how we got to this point in time is in 2002, Cargill and Metamorphics Incorporated signed a joint development agreement to develop marker panels for economically important traits. By the late 2005, we had gone through that development and validation process and had validated marker panels. And in 2006, we began production-related trials to determine the most productive way to use these marker panels in the feedlot. In 2007, we went to the majority of the animals being tested in one of our five feedlot locations. And by mid-2008, we went to 100% testing in our Kansas and Texas yards. That's four out of the five locations. So by about this time, about midsummer this year, we'll probably have a marker panel data on about 500,000 head of cattle. So just to start off, to give you some of the business aspects that Cargill has that kind of have allowed us to implement this technology is Cargill is a customer-focused business. We believe that long-term profitability is driven by how well you can take care of the customer. So if the customer's happy, they're going to demand your product, and that's going to drive long-term profitability. And so for the cattle feeding organization within Cargill, Cargill Cattle Feeders, our customers excel, but we take it a step further, and really our customers are Excel's customers. So those retailers and food service folks that are selling our branded products to the consumer. And so because of this customer focus, we have a really intense focus on carcass endpoint and meeting carcass specifications. But at the same time, we have to maintain production efficiency at least as well as the average feedlot producer in the industry. And so because of that, we're extensive utilizers of technology to focus on carcass endpoint and also on production efficiency. Another aspect of our business is we have implemented individual animal management in that every animal that enters our feedlot gets an EID, so we track that animal from arrival to the packing plant, which creates a tremendous amount of data, which creates some challenges there, but it also provides a lot of benefit in giving us the ability to benchmark technologies and really determine the true value of those technologies. And thirdly, our alliance and integration with Excel has allowed for that defined carcass target, and I think that's real key to implementing a technology like this, is that you really need to know where you're going. And also, we get substantial data collection with that alliance and our integration, and that we have complete carcass data on every animal that we feed. So marker-assisted management, what are we talking about here? What's the goal of this, using technology in this manner? And really what we're after is being able to optimize the capability of that animal. And I'm not necessarily saying the genetic potential, because that animal may be able to read a particular genetic potential, but from a production efficiency standpoint, it may not make sense for us to get there. So really, it's the economic capability of that animal. So what production goals are we chasing here? So the two primary for our operations is production efficiency and carcass endpoint. And those kind of go hand in hand for us. And there's lots of management practices that we can implement. They're either simple to complex, and we can combine them together. And they may be as simple as body weight to calculate how many days on feed we're going to feed that animal. What's the breed composition of a pen or a group of cattle? Hide color, are we going to use growth promotants, and what kind of strategy are we going to use? Using feed additives such as beta agonists, using ultrasound technology to determine body composition to further define an endpoint, and then in this case, using genetic information to help us make decisions, are combining a number of these technologies to really assist us in making a true management decision on these cattle. So what are the opportunities for this type of technology? If you look at traditionally how we've managed cattle in the feedlot, We focus a lot on what the breed composition of the pen, and for cattle feeders, really they like to see those black cattle, Angus type cattle. And then we'll focus on frame size, so what's the mature endpoint of that of those cattle going to be, and then body weight to determine how many days on feed. But if you look at these two pens of cattle, you can see the cattle on the upper right. They're primarily an Angus type cattle, a few crossbreds in there, versus the cattle on the lower right or lower left. That's lots of crossbreds, lots of different breeds in there, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, because this technology really gives us the ability to look into those pens and say, what's the genetic composition and what's the genetic potential of those animals in the pen? And it really varies as much within each of those pens when we look across our populations. So challenges to using this type of technology. Any management strategy that we employ is going to have to be responsive to the changing dynamics of our feedlot population. And if you look in a feedlot population over a year cycle, we're going to have geographic trends, cattle that will be coming out of, say, California today. Next month, they may be coming out of Kansas, Oklahoma. The week after, we may get some cattle out of the southeast. So there's lots of genetic differences between those types of cattle because of their environments. Seasonal trends in terms of weight of cattle and also backgrounds coming in, whether those cattle were coming directly off the ranch, we're in a grow yard, we're on wheat, whatever. Lots of different backgrounds and environmental impact. Oops. Potentially possible out there. And our decision is also a complex decision. We're not just deciding what we're going to do with this animal, whether we're going to breed them or not or call them. We're making decisions on what's the end point of this animal going to be, how long we're going to feed it, what kind of growth promotants are we going to use, or additionally, what kind of beta agonists are we going to use. So it's a complex decision, and also we have to account for environmental factors. So background's a big one, and also things like weather can have a big impact on what kind of end point we're going to reach on those cattle. So to jump into the production process and how we make this work in the production setting, really the DNA collection process begins on arrival. So we go through that initial processing that all feeders do. So we give them, we vaccinate those cattle, deworm them, give them a lot tag, give them that electronic ID. We'll usually capture an individual animal body weight. And then all that data goes into our database, and so we'll link that back to purchase information such as who bought the cattle, where they bought them from, what they paid, the shrink on the cattle, et cetera, et cetera. When we collect DNA, we originally started collecting blood via a tail bleed, but that's been a kind of a slow and messy process. It slows down the processing of those cattle significantly. So we've gone to a nasal swab where one of the processors was reaching there, grabs a quick nasal swab, and we'll then take that, apply it to an FDA card, which is barcoded, and then link that back to the ID with a barcode scanner. So it's a pretty efficient process. We can process greater than 200 head per hour collecting DNA in addition to our normal processes. And then that sample will go out to MMI, usually on a weekly basis, and then in about 2 or 3 weeks we'll get that data back from them. It'll go back into our database, and it's ready for then to make a decision on what we're going to do with those cattle. And the real decision occurs at re-implant time. We're going to take another measure of body composition on those cattle, and we're going to use that genetic information. And in our case, we're focusing on a marbling panel, and I'll call that a marbling MGV, or molecular genetic value. And so we use that information, we'll make a decision on what we're going to do with those cattle, and on an individual basis, we'll make an implant decision. Are we going to implant that animal or not? And then what kind of potency of an implant are we going to use? In order to drive, say, if we have an animal that's borderline choice select, if so, well, maybe we use a lower potency implant, or maybe not even give that animal an implant at all. And then we'll use a sorting fan tailgate system like this. The operator then presses a button, and the animal is released from the chute and sorted into its outcome group. So one thing, it would be ideal to manage individuals, but in our feedlot systems, we're primarily based on that that old lot pen combination. So we feed pens of cattle, we ship pens of cattle. We don't really ship individuals or feed individuals. And so one important consideration in utilizing this technology is how you're going to manage group size. You need to have groups that are large enough to where you can fill pens and not underutilize the capacity of your feedlot, but you don't want them so small as to you're not really taking advantage of the genetic differences or population differences in the cattle. And so what we've done is we'll use individual management in terms of growth implants on those cattle, like I mentioned, but then we'll sort the population into four outcome groups. And so group one is characterized by kind of early maturing type cattle. These cattle will finish rapidly, they grow rapidly. If we feed them for an extended period of time, these are the kind of cattle that are going to get you into trouble with yield grade fours and fives. Group two is characterized kind of by your average type cattle. Group three is going to be your immature type cattle, those cattle that maybe were younger coming into the feedlot, or the breeds that maybe mature at a larger weight as compared to their pen mates. So they're going to need a few extra days on feed. And group four is going to be our genetically superior animals in terms of their ability to marble, and they'll go into that group. And then from there, we'll use group management technologies such as different beta agonist strategies, and we haven't gone this far, but we could implement different rations to the different groups to maximize production efficiency. So I'm just going to kind of take you through the results here. This is an evaluation we just completed. It was about 88,000 head of cattle. All the slides will be in this format with the groups along the x-axis and the item of interest in the upper left-hand corner. So this is body weight at reimplant, and as I mentioned, kind of follows that scenario. Group one is those early maturing cattle, high gaining cattle, so they're going to be the heaviest out of the group. The group two, just average cattle right in the middle, and group three, those are your immature type cattle, so they're going to be a little lighter. And group four is just kind of in the mix of the things, kind of running right around that average. If we look at our marbling MGV, and this data is kind of displayed in a similar way as an EPD, with zero being the population average, below being below the average, or a negative number, and a positive number being above the average. So when we look across the groups, group 1, 2, and 3, they're really running right around that population average, so between 3 and minus 1.5. But what we're able to do with this technology, these marker panels, is to pull those cattle out that have the really high potential to grade. And so you can see group 4, they're running 23 points above the population average. When we look at body composition on these cattle, if we set group two, those average type cattle, to say they're average, we'll look, group one is significantly fatter because they're those early maturing type cattle. Group four, also those premium high potential cattle, they're going to be a little fatter as intermuscular kind of comes along with that subcutaneous fat deposition. And group three, they're a little behind in those immature type cattle. And so if we move into the carcass traits of these groups, what you'll see is with the least number of days on feed on group one, they're going to have the lightest carcass weights, but we're still with a decent sized carcass weight on those cattle. Group two, they're going to be intermediate, and group three is going to have the highest carcass weights with the most days on feed. Group four is going to be right in the mix, really not much difference from the average population or average type cattle in the population. If we look at ribeye area, we're really controlling where those cattle fall in terms of ribeye area. Group one and three, they're running a little over a 13-inch ribeye, and group two, almost hitting that 14-inch desired ribeye size by most retailers. Group three gets a little larger, but we're still kind of within that range of that 14-inch ribeye. When we look at dressing percent on these cattle, group one, least number of days on feed, lowest dressing percent at 63. When we look at groups two and four, they're really running about 64% dressing on those cattle. And when we move into the longer fed day cattle in group three, we're running almost 65%. So some differences, but we're using that kind of to our advantage on those cattle. And when we talk about endpoint management, when we look at back fat thickness on these cattle, groups 1, 2, and 3 really running right around that 0.45 inches of back fat. And we let the group 4 cattle get slightly fatter due to that high genetic potential to marble, but still well controlled within running right around a half an inch of back fat. When we look at yield grades, kind of a similar story, running around about a 3 yield grade on groups 1, 2, and 3, a little higher on group 4. And this is really where the effect of that marker panel comes in. When we look at our population, averages about a marbling score of 400. Groups 1 and 2 and 3 are really right in that range. And then we look at our high genetic potential animals in group 4. They're running almost a 485 marbling score on those cattle. So we're really pulling those cattle out that have the high potential to marble. When we look at USDA called quality choice, quality grade and the number of choice grading cattle, groups 1, 2, and 3 grading right around 43% on average. And when we pull those high genetically capable animals out of the population, we're grading almost 80% choice in that population. So just to kind of summarize some of the key aspects that we've had to incorporate marker-assisted management into our operation, electronic identification has been key driver in allowing us to collect this data and manage it throughout the production system. The data management systems have been very important. There's a large amount of data is created in this process. And also that data has been important to allow us to benchmark this technology and really derive value out of it. And then additionally, that defined endpoint target has really been key to allow us to focus on where we're going to take that technology. And so I think what we've proven is that we can use this type of technology to optimize the individual management of an animal within a group-based system, and it provides a lot of value to the cattle feeding operation through increased production efficiency by really managing endpoint and defining days on feed of those cattle, and also provides a lot of value to our customers through hitting those product specifications that they desire, and also consistency of those carcasses. If you go in the packing plant and watch these cattle go by on the rail, they're really consistent, a lot less sorting in the hot boxes for fabrication of those carcasses. And so I would imagine we'll see further adoption of this technology as the number of traits increase, the accuracy of those traits increase. I think we're just really at the beginning of utilizing this technology in production environments and also seed stock environments. Thank you.